and welcome to today's Job Seeker Broadcast. Our topic is finding the hidden jobs. And if you're a serious job hunter, you need to know where to look to find these types of jobs. 80% of jobs are filled before they ever get posted on the internet or on any list because they're hidden. And if you're spending your time just poking around looking at posted vacancies, you're only looking at 20% that everyone else is looking at, and those are the ones they're competing for, competing against you. To help me discuss this topic today, I'm joined by a special guest, George Dutch, out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, George, up in Canada.
Hello, John. I'm happy to be back online with you again.
Yes, and it's good to have you back with us. George has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992, and that's over 20 years of coaching and counseling experience. His career transition company is entitled Job Joy. He hosts his own weekly show entitled Career Connection. George also does consulting for Fortune 500 companies, all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. George has authored two publications, Job Joy and Job Boot Camp. Now, George, our topic, finding the hidden job, kind of begs a question, and that is exactly what is a hidden job. So before we jump in and start to discussing how to find the hidden jobs, let's talk a little bit about what it is. A hidden job, by definition, is something that is not immediately found by going on a company's website or finding a job vacancy listing service. The hidden job is a position that is in the process of becoming a posted or an actual vacancy. It's a need, and sometimes we refer to as an opportunity. The organization is growing, the industry is changing, the organization is right-sizing, downsizing, opening up a branch office, and there are multitudes of positions that are in process. Companies have a tendency to fill those positions with inside people and people they already know, and that's the key. Companies, organizations, government agencies prefer to hire people they already know. And so that's why all these hidden jobs are filled before they ever get posted. By the time they get posted, the company's saying, we can't find anyone, and so they're going to throw it out there for competition. Now, George, that's a definition of sorts. Help me define the hidden job a little better. How do you define it?
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to be careful about when we say hidden job market is that it often conjures up this false notion that employers are deliberately hiding or preventing job seekers from finding these jobs. And that's simply not the case. When a job is posted, usually it's following an orderly, predictable process that favors the stable side of organizations or the economy. But a lot of jobs are created by unpredictable factors, both externally in the economy as well as internally within an organization. And sometimes these hidden jobs are responses or reactions by an organization to these unstable drivers that create work, and hence work has to be organized into a job that then needs to be filled, not so much in an orderly, predictable fashion, but often very quickly. And managers have a lot of latitude, a lot of power in filling those kinds of jobs.
That's right. And a lot of times other department heads and senior employees are aware of these things, and they have their neighbors, their friends, their passed to colleagues, and they're beginning to coach and prep those individuals. Say, by the way, I have a feeling that we're going to be looking for someone, and that someone comes along. And, you know, I've always marveled, why is it that employers tend to favor someone they already know? And my hunch, George, and you help me on this as well, my hunch is that if a person, a candidate, knows someone in the company, and that someone in the company speaks well of that individual, it's sort of like the employer has a litmus test of, well, this at least this person is a safe person. They're not a crook, and they're not going to rip us off. So they're, it's a little easier for me to get to know that person than someone that's totally cold, that may be falsifying information. I have to go through a whole process to get to know them. A lot easier to try to look at someone that is known. How do you take that issue of why employers always tend to favor people they already know of or know?
Yeah, I think a lot of job seekers, especially if they've encountered some roadblocks or obstacles to finding a job, will often think that the fact that most employers prefer to hire somebody they know is unfair, that it smacks of nepotism and favoritism. And I explained to them, no, that's not the case. Of course, those things exist, but they're very minor in the North American workplace because we live under the rule of law and people tend to follow rules and regulations, because if they don't, they expose themselves to liability. There's a lot of litigation in the workplace. We live in a very litigious society in America where anybody can sue anybody for anything at any time, and as you know, they often do.
Yes.
Right. So employers are trying to avoid that pain. They're trying to avoid the pain of litigation. By hiring somebody they don't know, they're exposing themselves to liability. That's why the hiring process is so much a risk assessment exercise from the employer's point of view. They don't want to hire a problem. They don't want to hire a court case, a litigation. So this is why they prefer to hire either somebody they know or somebody that's referred to them, as you mentioned, from a reliable source. In fact, I was working with a client just today in this very area. He had been doing some prospecting in local organizations. And the other point I want to make before I get into my story is that this hidden job market doesn't apply very much to entry-level jobs. Entry-level jobs are often posted and filled through that orderly, predictable fashion because there's not a lot of risk attached to them. Employers can hire people at low-skill, low-pay positions for probationary periods, and if it doesn't work out, they can dismiss that new hire without any cost or liability to them. So when we talk about the hidden job market, we're usually talking about more established positions that are higher up on the chain of command that are more important to the fortunes in the future of that organization.
Yeah.
So this client of mine was prospecting in an organization, a national medical organization, a standards organization, and he had a former colleague that he used to work with that had landed a job there. And by talking to that colleague, he found out that they were having a lot of problems in that organization dealing with big internal projects. They had problems with the process of project management internally. And this led to a meeting with the CFO in the company. And they were able to have a great discussion that led to a job being posted that my client applied for through the normal channels, and with the referral of his former colleague, and was actually given a job offer today, a six-figure job offer. So this is how employers often hire in the hidden job market, is there is a need, as you said, a priority internally that needs to be dealt with, solved, resolved, and they look for referrals from trusted sources like current employees for people that will be less of a risk, people that they can count on because they have not only a referral, but they can check out that person's work history and make sure that they're reliable, dependable, and competent.
Yeah, okay. Now, as we're talking about the hidden job, though, and our listeners starting to get on board, first of all, we're trying to, as professionals, say these jobs do exist. 80% of positions are filled before they ever get posted. And those 80% of jobs are the hidden jobs, so they get filled before they ever get posted. Nobody knows they actually were vacant because they weren't vacant. And so, you know, the thing, if I was listening to this discussion, I would be saying, okay, I'm on board. I want to get access to those hidden jobs. Exactly how do I find them? So let me take a slice at this, George, and then you help me on this. So where a person finds the hidden job, I like to use two words. You find it in an organization that's growing, and you find it in an organization that's changing. Your much larger organizations are going to change and grow in a more orderly, systematic process. Your smaller organizations can grow or change at the drop of a hat, depending on opportunities that may come along. And we have to remember that 80% of business firms have 20 or less people there. That makes that a very small organization. And the largest number of that 80% are companies that have 5 or less people. So if a job hunter is going to maximize their job hunting activity, they need to spend a large amount of time connecting with these companies that are 20 employees or less. And what we're saying today is you need to be connecting with companies that don't have posted vacancies as long as you suspect they're growing or changing. So those are the two code words. So then you begin to ask, well, how do I know a company is growing or changing? Well, there are industry guidelines of what industries are growing and which industries are retreating or retooling. So that's a start. But, George, you and I agree that a person can't even begin the hidden job search unless they have a stated, very clear goal. I'm looking for a job in this type of a company, and the job title is XYZ. And that then establishes their search procedure. Well, I need a list of all those companies that do that, and I'm going to start contacting them to get some information. Now, George, let's back up a little bit. We're trying to define where those jobs are. You like to use the word driver. What is driving these hidden jobs, and how can we sense that ahead of time?
Well, there are two kinds of drivers, as I've mentioned already. One is an external driver, what's happening externally to the organization in the general economy and society and the economy in general. And then there are internal drivers, things that are happening within the company. And both of these can foster work because of the dynamics of growth and change that you mentioned. So externally, just by reading the newspapers, listening to the news on the radio or TV, we catch economic and social trends, such as what's happening in world politics or the global economy.
George, we need to take a short break, and we're going to pick it right up where we left off.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are, first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose.
Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's the starting point, Evan.
Okay. Well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
And we're back to our broadcast. Our topic today is finding the hidden jobs. And our special guest today is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors. He's featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio by just clicking Preferred Counselors on our website. George, we were right in the middle of talking about drivers that cause these hidden jobs to occur. And what we want our listener to see here is there are certain circumstances and conditions, and you said both internal and external, that are the beginning. It's almost like a wave that's starting to begin. And if you know if you know how to read waves, you start seeing motion in the water, and you predict this motion is going to lead to a wave. And so this motion, there's internal and external wave motion, and we want to be a little more skilled in predicting, is this motion going to suggest a job? And I think that's right where we went to the break. So take it from there.
Yes. Any kind of problem or challenge or impact issue or pressure point will cause an organization to expand or downsize or change or grow in some form or another. And anytime there's that kind of change reacting to those drivers, it creates jobs, because work is nothing more than activity, really, when you think about it. Activity organized around the problems and challenges and impact issues and pressure points that get in the way of corporate goals and objectives. And sometimes these are big drivers that exist in the external economy. We all know how a change in interest rates changed the housing industry, and how government legislation and laws, for example, in the finance and banking industry, can change that industry overnight. The world economy, trends in the world economy can change the nature of organizations and create all kinds of problems and challenges or opportunities for them. There are changes in interest rates, foreign competition, new technology, public opinion. So just by staying abreast of the news or drilling down into certain sectors that you're interested in, reading trade journals in those sectors, going to the websites of conferences and conventions in those sectors. Why do managers go to conferences and conventions and subscribe to journals, trade journals? Because they want to keep up to date with trends and issues that might have an impact on the way their organization does business or operates in the way that they would do their job. So you're really trying to tap into the kinds of problems and challenges and issues and pressures that managers face in the sector or the organization you're interested in, because that's what fosters work. And that's why that's a central principle for the hidden job market, because many jobs, almost 50% of jobs, are created for an individual who walks through the door and gets a manager focused on the kinds of problems and challenges that are getting in the way of their corporate goals. This is really what is at the root of work.
Yes. Well, and as you're describing that, you know, I was thinking of a very concrete or specific example. And let's just pick a topic that everyone knows about, and that's higher education. Many years ago, there was a new dynamic that just took higher education by an absolute windstorm. It was just like a hurricane, and that was the topic of degree completion. And that meant colleges started to ramp up and began providing a curriculum that would allow those that had maybe 1 or 2 years of college 15 years ago to come back and finish up and get a four-year degree. And they could just go to school at night, one night a week, and so on. And that created a huge cash cow for colleges and universities. Well, any university or college that wanted to implement that was going to have to hire individuals. So that's a very classic example of knowing there's a trend, and now that you understand that trend, you're looking for colleges that are wanting to ramp up to install that program. Another program in higher education is another example that's more current are campuses that are revamping into online classes and courses. Well, that opens up a huge door in terms of the IT technology and the management of that, and also managing and hosting faculty that are only online faculty as opposed to your classroom faculty. So those are just that's a very nominal example. Every industry has these kind of things, and that's why it's so important that our listener, our job hunter, have a focus. I am looking for a job in this particular field. What are the issues external that are causing change, causing growth, especially in this slow economy? George, I want to turn the corner, and I want to try to answer the question, how does somebody engage with the company to discover if, in fact, there is a hidden opportunity? And, George, you and I use the word opportunity instead of vacancy. An opportunity is something, it's a wave that is in process, but it hasn't been identified as a technical wave that's breaking right now that everybody can see. By that time, it's a posted vacancy. And so what we want to do is catch that wave before anybody else knows about it and fill that vacancy, fill that opportunity. So how this is done is through a relationship. So our listener has to choose those organizations that are within driving distance, has to find someone within the organization that manages the department that he or she wants to work for, and has to engage that department head, that manager, that executive, in a conversation to discover, is there any movement here? Is anything going on that would eventually lead to an opportunity? And the things that we're talking about, both internal and external, is there any planned growth? Or are there any planned changes that are going on? So let's focus now, George, our conversation on the actual how does our client, our listener, flesh out this potential opportunity, and they're just, all they see is a name out there of a company, ABX company. How do they know? How do they find out? Is there a hidden position there? How do you coach your clients to get in there and dig around and find that?
Sure. And maybe this would be a great point to introduce a question that we can then answer and illustrate the principles that you've just raised. So the question is from Jonathan in San Diego. He says, I have been working at a jet propulsion lab as a physicist. I have also started up and sold my own business. I like turnaround type of work. How do I find turnaround types of job opportunities? So in this case, one of the things I might do, John, with Jonathan in San Diego is, as you said, help him identify companies or a sector of the economy, perhaps it's aerospace, that he would like to work in that interests him or stimulating for him. And then we would look at the major players and in that industry in his geographic area. And we would do a little research, you know, what is the organization's major business or service? Is there any reports in the news on obstacles to them reaching their corporate goals and objectives? Has there been any change in senior management within the last year? If so, what effect has that had? Because as you know, every organization lives and dies by the competency of its management team. So when management changes, it usually means a change in direction, a change in priority.
There's a 50% turnover in management every 2 years. So if a company, we know that most every company has got some manager in transition at just about any given time. Sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
No, very good point. And we'd look to see if there was an annual report or a newsletter, a magazine available about that organization. We'd look for to see if, what leaders in the field are members of that organization. Is it a new field? Is this an older organization trying to catch up to some new opportunities? Just get a picture of where that company's at economically and where it fits into its sector. And then we would start the process of finding the names of people in those companies that Jonathan might want to talk to, people either at peer level or one step or two steps above peer level, aiming, of course, at people in the C-level executive suite because they're the decision makers. So getting those names, there's different tools and techniques for getting those names. Sometimes they're available online on the website, but not always these days, sometimes in the trade journals, sometimes through LinkedIn or other social media tools and techniques can be helpful, but also by talking to people in the industry, starting with people that you know, not necessarily that in that industry, but certain networking techniques that maybe we can touch on and elaborate on later. But I know that we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so I just want to wrap this up and then turn it over to you, John, with some tips. So I would get him to focus on getting the names of actual people in the companies that he wants to explore and investigate. And not only their names, but their job titles, and then start approaching them, both formally and informally, depending on the strategy that we think is best suited to him and the sector that he is targeting.
Yes, excellent. And I think, George, as you and I coach clients to do this, what we're finding is that our listener has to have a topic, something to engage in conversation. You don't just call somebody and say, do you have any hidden jobs over there? That's called cold calling, and nobody likes to do that, and employers certainly don't want to spend time responding. You're going to get a zero rate of response. So step one, it's best if you know someone on the inside that is going to refer you to the key individual who has the authority for the job you want. So you've got to find out from this person on the inside who the department head is, who the executive is, the COO, whoever it is that oversees your department. So now you're planning. So I'm going to contact this person by telephone as preferred. Telephone's always best. When you call, you use the name of the person on the inside that referred you. Now, George, I recommend that the job hunter call with a research topic. I'm doing some research about, and we'll pick this up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us two basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like, something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options.
90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our show.
And we're back again talking about finding the hidden jobs. And my guest, special guest today, is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. And George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website right under the tab Preferred Counselors. And George, we were just before the break, we were talking about the steps. How does someone get their toe in the water, get their foot in the water, and dive in to discover a hidden job opportunity? There is no list. There is no secret website or inside list that we're talking about. We're talking about identifying a wave while it's still in the process of forming. And the way you do that is you want to engage the department head that oversees the position you want, and you want to find out, is there change, planned change, or sudden change, or growth, planned growth, or sudden growth. That's it. That's what tells you there's something going on here. And so I counsel our clients to begin the discussion. You call to set up an appointment. Person wants to know, well, why are you calling? What's this all about? I'm doing a study, and the study is about the issues that are confronting that industry, that are forcing that industry to have to change. Something's going on. Legislation, foreign competition, a increase in accident rates, new quality control standards, the slow economy. There are many, many kinds of issues. I'm doing a study regarding food processing plants, and I'm talking to managers to understand. Now, that's very general, but I think what we're trying to do is say to our listener, this is something you can do. You're not going to just listen to this and pick up the phone and call an employer. You have to work on it. And these are the proven things that have worked time after time after time. Now, once you get in and have that discussion, it should be just 30 minutes. All you're trying to do is start a relationship and have a meaningful, intellectually stimulating conversation. And then you ask permission, if I have any further questions, could I get back to you? And really what you want, and George, this is what I do with our clients, is want to get back in a second time. It's the second time that you're asking the change or growth questions, not the first time. And so once change or growth has been understood, that you've identified it, the employer has said, yes, these things are going on, now you're ready in a position to ask, is there a possibility where I could bring my 25 years, my 10 years of organizational management or IT to assist you in achieving that goal? Is that a conversation that we could begin to have? So you're asking permission to start a conversation before the wave has crested and gone its full cycle. So let me pause there, George. You fill in some of the gaps, and maybe you've got some other strategy techniques or suggestions on how to identify that hidden job and then how to get on that surfboard and ride it all the way in.
Sure. If we go back to Jonathan's question for a moment, he said, I like turnaround type of work. How do I find turnaround types of job opportunities? Well, as you've already referred to the fact that any kind of change in the economy or laws or regulations, there's always winners and losers. So if he's looking for turnaround opportunities, he needs to look at companies that have been disadvantaged by a change in the economy or regulations or standards or new pricing or whatever in the sector that he's targeting, let's say aerospace. So what another strategy he could use other than cold calling or calling somebody on the phone is you can send an approach letter. You can send an approach letter saying, I got your name from so-and-so, or I read your latest article in the Aerospace Journal of California, and you identified a number of trends. I'd like to meet with you for advice, and I'd like to discuss the following questions. And you actually list two or three questions around the pressures and problems and challenges and impact issues that you think are relevant to that industry or that company. I encourage people to keep it relevant to the industry, to the sector, rather than to the company, because when you ask a question around certain topics about a company, sometimes it implies criticism. But everybody loves to talk about their sector or the industry.
Yes.
And then ask, as you said, for 30 minutes of their time. And you might even put in a paragraph of 50 words or less that summarizes your experience, your background. Remember, it's not you begging for a job or trying to sell yourself. You're trying to tap into the pain points of that manager who is faced with problems and challenges and issues and pressures every day in helping their organization reach corporate goals and objectives. And if it was easy to achieve corporate goals and objectives, they'd do all the work themselves, and those managers would make more money and get more glory for their efforts. But they can't do all the work themselves. That's why they need staff. That's why they actually appreciate it when you approach them, either on the phone or in a letter or even an email. And there's different strategies for different circumstances. But the point is, you're making their job easier because, as you've already pointed out, there are hidden jobs. In America, there's always jobs, and organizations are always hiring because of these drivers that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And so managers are actually waiting for you to contact them to make their job easier. You're doing them a favor by contacting them. So I would counsel Jonathan to be very specific about approaching companies and asking some questions. Again, these questions can be found in journals or on the websites of conferences and conventions in the sector that he's targeting, and to ask questions that can get a conversation going, because you're quite right. The purpose of that first meeting is not to get a job. It's to establish rapport, to create the circumstance for fostering that manager's ability to like you, trust you, respect you. That has to begin first before there's actually a job or work created for you.
Yeah, and you know, the numbers are not that large. 25% of the labor force is in transition every year. And so just from an internal change, somebody, if you've got a company of 100 people, 25 people are in transition every year in that company of 100. Those 25 positions are going to get filled through the hidden job. They're not, the preference is not to get them posted. So the importance of learning how to start a discussion with someone who is a decision maker that oversees a department that you're interested in is of paramount importance. And George, you're suggesting, well, I think we've got several vehicles here. We can do a letter and we can do a phone call, but in all cases, it's much better if we have the name of someone on the inside. That's the place to start, someone on the inside that gives you a name, or someone that knows that department head. And I would say for our listener, set a reasonable goal. I'm going to go after 10 and see what happens. 10 is a very good goal in terms of I'm going to go after 10 organizations, and my goal is to get inside and have that first meeting. I'm not taking a resume. All you're taking is a folder with a blank pad of paper. You're not dressing to as you would for a job interview, but you're dressing at the same level as the person that you're talking to. If you dress way up in a dress to impress, then you're sending a mixed message. So you're dressing at the same level as the person you're talking to, and you're carrying on a very there's something in it for the person that you're talking to. And George, you started with one of our job seeker questions. Maybe there's another job seeker question that we could use as a demo for how to do the hidden job search. Have you got another one?
Yes, actually, I'd like to refer to a few. I'd like to take it back a notch to an important step. And I want to address three questions. One from Anne in Portland. She says, my children are gone and I would like to find something to do. I do not need much money, just would like to be useful. Sherry in California says, I've been a hairdresser for 10 years and do not want to continue in that work. I am a single mom with two young children. What are my options? And Tammy in Oregon says, I seem to get dead-end jobs which have no future. The good jobs are out of my reach. What can I do? Now, of course, the first thing they have to do is they have to get more clarity about where and what, where to work, what job titles are suited for them. But here's something each one of them can do, very simple, that anybody can do, Anne, Sherry, Tammy, or anybody else, is the average American knows about 250 people. That means people that Anne and Sherry know, Tammy knows in their circle of family and friends, people they go to fitness class with, people that maybe they know from their children's daycare, people they go to church with, people they used to work with or go to school with, people in their neighborhood, their doctor, their dentist, their car mechanic. Every person knows about 250 people. We know a lot more people than we realize. Our job is to make it easy for those people to help us. And the way we do that is we tell them exactly what we're looking for. So if you're looking for a particular job, tell everybody you know exactly what you're looking for. Be very specific. Don't say, I'm looking for a job. Say, I want to do this in these 10 organizations or these 20 organizations. And then say to them, do you know anybody I can talk to? Now, John, if you tell 50 people exactly what you're looking for, each one of those 50 people knows how many people.
There you go. Yeah.
Another 250.
That's
so
right.
Do the math. Now you've got thousands of people at your fingertips. And I can guarantee Anne, Sherry, and Tammy, if they can get clarity about what they want to do, and they tell 50 people exactly what they're looking for, that means there's 1,000 people now at their fingertips. Some of those people are going to say to Anne, Sherry, and Tammy, you know what? Anne, my second cousin, is married to a woman whose brother-in-law works at such and such an organization or a company or a small business. Let's give them a call. I've been meaning to call them since Thanksgiving. I haven't had a chance, but now I've got a good excuse. So they call on Anne's behalf. They hook her up to the relative or the contact who is happy to meet with Anne or talk to them on the phone or have a coffee with them, because now Anne is part of an inner circle that person knows. So they like, trust, and respect the person that's referred Anne. So she's in that circle of trust now. And when Anne says, can you refer me to this person in your company? That person.
George, let's pick this up after the break.
Sure.
Hello, this is Evan Newman back for a final 2-minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hardwiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft-wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft-wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your hardwired, your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs. I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning softwired traits?
Yes, Evan. Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills and choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
And we're back to our show. We're talking about finding the hidden jobs, and I'm accompanied by our guest co-host, Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website under Preferred Counselors. George, we got cut off at the break. We're down to our last quarter hour, and you were summarizing. There were three job seeker questions that you had summarized in. We're advising those three in terms of how to identify the hidden job and how to begin to pursue that through contacting a network of individuals. And, you know, as I was listening to that wonderful narrative that you were giving, that you and I believe, there's this little voice that popped into my head, and it was, wow, that sounds like a lot of work. And so the response to that is, yes, job hunting is a lot of work, and a person can begin digging with a toothpick, or they can begin digging with an axe pick. You get a lot farther with an axe pick and a shovel, as opposed to a toothpick or a toothbrush. And the toothpick and the toothbrush are looking at vacancies on a posted list. And what we're saying is that you can really, really dig a nice deep trench in your job hunting by connecting with 10 organizations that fit the industry that you want to pursue. It is going to take work. There's no question about it, but this is what job hunting is all about. It's finding the hidden job. So, George, let's wrap it up on these three, and let's take another job seeker question that we received.
Okay, I just wanted to wrap up by saying if you can identify any preferred employers and have some idea of the kind of job you're suited for in those organizations, and then you tell people, everybody you know, what you're looking for specifically, and ask them, do you know anybody I should talk to? It will lead to job leads. I had a client that did this recently, and she got 5 job leads out of talking to 50 people in her network, because each of those 50 people knows another 250 people, so now you've got thousands of people in your network. It's very, very simple form of job search and very powerful. She got face-to-face meetings with 2 hiring managers, and a lot of drivers of work of new jobs are internal. They're not necessarily external. And this woman was working in a job that she didn't enjoy, but it allowed her to work maybe 10% of the time with a software called SharePoint that she really enjoyed using. And she wanted to find a job that would allow her to work 80% of the time with this software. So her questions were organized around how this software helps organizations meet their corporate goals and objectives. And when she got into meet these 2 hiring managers, what became apparent in one meeting was that this particular company was actually turning away customers because they were so busy. And the second company had a problem getting their clients to understand the process, which was a business challenge for them. Both of those problems or challenges internally in those companies were creating work. And my client is now in negotiation with the first company that's turning away customers because they are looking at creating a job for her. So I want to show the connection between, for Anne, Sherry, and Tammy, that when you know what you want to do and where you want to do it and you tell people, it will lead to meetings with decision makers, with hiring managers who have lots of problems and challenges and issues that it will share with you, because business is all about building relationships, right? Helping people out. And if you do that, if you listen to them for the problems and challenges they're having, it will foster work, and it does lead to some kind of job opportunity 80% of the time, as you said.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Okay, excellent, George. How about some other job seeker questions that we've received?
Okay, let's look at this question here from Amy. She says, I've been a public school teacher, and I want to get more involved in training youth, which involves technology. I really don't like working in the public school system. Can you give me some assistance in how I could look for a hidden job?
Well, the thing that we always have to say to the job hunter is the first thing an employer wants to know about you is what are you currently doing or what have you done? So Amy has a brand, and the brand is a public school teacher, but Amy doesn't want that brand anymore. She wants to be a trainer of youth involved in technology. So I would say step one for Amy, you need to meet the person that's doing the job you want to do, Amy, and find out what that job title is. And since Amy doesn't want public education, in the United States, there are specialty vocational schools that also are part of public education, and there are private vocational schools, both of which are at the high school or young adult level, the teen level. There are many schools that advertise that they're called vocational. Some of them are called vocational colleges. Some are called tech schools. But Amy needs to make sure that there is a bona fide job title as opposed to just some sort of generic, oh, I just want to train youth and involve technology, and there should be something out there. Well, we got to make sure there is. And once Amy finds the person that has her job, that individual is going to tell her, Amy, if I was you and you wanted the job I'm doing, then these are the steps that you go through. And in addition, that person should make some referrals to Amy of other colleagues or other institutions, educational institutions, where that person knows someone, and now Amy is off and running in her hidden job search. It would appear to me that with Amy's prior education background and the fact that she enjoys teaching technology, there isn't going to be a barrier in terms of qualification. It's just a matter of she's making a switch, but it's still in the education field, and so she's not incurring a barrier there. George, what are your thoughts on helping Amy?
Well, again, I would look for those drivers in the external economy. A lot of companies, of course, are equipping with technology so that they can do more work and do it more efficiently. They have young workforces like finance organizations, like insurance companies, institutions, online educational institutions, video game companies. They all use technology to a great degree. They have a tremendous need to upskill their employees because technology is changing all the time. If Amy can find a technology that she really enjoys teaching that is in demand in a large sector, she could probably get a lot of contract work or corporate trainer work internally, because a lot of large organizations, Fortune 500 companies, have their own internal university campuses where they teach their employees technology skills. So there's lots of opportunity out there.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's an excellent piece of advice. And there are these incredible internal universities, and these large companies, they actually have their own faculty. George, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your help today.
You're most welcome, John. It's been a pleasure.
And so that wraps up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.